Hi, and welcome to the After Animals podcast.
After Animals uncovers trends and stories at the cutting edge of the global post-animal movement. What does a future look like in which food, fashion, and entertainment no longer have to exploit animals to be successful?
Each episode, we will share with you a remarkable and inspiring story about someone who is forging a more compassionate future for us all.
After Animals is co-produced and hosted by me, Sharanya Krishnaprasad,
and me, Yulara Nakagawa.
Hey, this is Yulara. And in this episode, I speak to Sanjaya Siriram, who is the CEO and co-founder of Shiok Meats, a cell-based clean meat company. It's the first of its kind in Singapore and Southeast Asia. Shiok Meats is bringing cell-based crustacean meats such as shrimp, crab, and lobster to our tables, which are animal health and environmentally friendly with the same taste, texture, and even more nutrients. Sanjaya herself is an experienced stem cell scientist who has been featured on Forbes Women in Tech for her entrepreneurial ventures as well. I hope the valuable insights and tips she shares may be helpful to other scientists or biotech folks wanting to start their own mission-driven ventures. So I hope you enjoyed it because I sure did. So firstly, let's start from the beginning. Tell me how you got started in this field and how you came up with the idea for Shiok Meats.
Sure. So I can actually first start off by saying what Shiok means because a lot of people ask for that. So actually Shiok means fantastic or delicious in Singapore or Malaysian slang. And our company is based out in Singapore and hence the name. But at the same time, I have heard this from a lot of investors from the Valley that there is a Singaporean restaurant called Shiok in Menlo Park.
Oh.
It's very interesting. Yeah, so how we started this off was, so this company is co-founded by myself and my partner, Kai. We both are actually stem cell biologists by education and training. Did our undergrad and PhD with stem cells, did our postdoctoral research with stem cells. And then mid of last year, we both decided to quit our scientist and business development jobs. So I quit being a scientist a couple of years ago and took up business development with the government of Singapore. So we both decided to quit our jobs and start Shiok Meats just about a year back. We're going to celebrate our first anniversary very soon. So that's kind of our backstory, but in the sense that both of us, because we are skilled and our knowledge is all stem cells, we said, why not look at clean meat, especially if it's going to make sense for animals, for humans, and for the environment. Both of us stepped into science wanting to help the world, and we just felt that this was a better sector to help the world rather than staying within pharma or healthcare, which takes a long time to get to market. So I think early last year in January, I was kind of making my mind to start a full-time, you know, a startup on my own. And Ryan Bethencourt, whom we got introduced via, is actually one of my mentors and friends. And I've known him for about 4 years now. And I was basically brainstorming with him, asking him, like, we should do something in Asia together. What do you think we should work on? And we had a couple of ideas that we bounced around. And what kind of stuck to both of us was clean meat. And just being in Asia Pacific, working on clean meat, but working on red or white meat didn't make sense to me. So I definitely wanted to do seafood. And among seafood, it kind of bottled down to crustaceans and shrimp, crab, and lobster in the end of it all, which made business sense as well as technology. You know, it has to make sense in terms of research and technology, and definitely in terms of skill and knowledge as well. And once I kind of decided to do that, I was looking for a full-time CTO. Even though I'm a scientist by training, I enjoy the business side. So I was looking for someone who's willing to work in the lab. And Kai and I have known each other for a couple of years. And she was looking for an exit from academia. And basically, that's how we started it off.
Wow, that's so inspiring. I think that you essentially already wanted to find a way to change the world, and then you crossed paths with Ryan, and then you came up with a way to hit an area that was very much not yet being looked at or targeted. So 3 to 5 years before the shrimp product can debut in the market, is there any way you can see that timeline moving faster?
Oh, no. So actually, we are looking at launching commercially at least in one restaurant in Singapore by early 2021. So that's only about 18, 24 months from now. but that'll still be a premium price, like a very niche market that we're looking at. But mass scale is about 5 to 6 years from now. So that's the kind of timelines we are in the midst of.
Okay, gotcha. And then what are some of the most important factors to nail down with your shrimp product that will make it succeed? Is it texture, flavor, look? What are you like fiercely focused on right now? What do you think will be the kind of the most important factor or factors?
Yeah, so for us, I think we are very concentrated on bringing the price point down. I think that's kind of common in all the clean meat companies. But the next is definitely nailing down the flavor. I mean, it's food. People always look for taste and price. That's kind of the ultimate thing about food. So it has to be something that they can afford, something that they can relate to in terms of flavor and taste. We are also working on texture and, you know, shape and all of that, but that might come a little later. Interestingly, in Asia, shrimp is not only eaten as a whole shrimp, like in sushi or tempura or something. It's also used as a paste. It's used as minced shrimp and so on. So it works okay for us if we don't have a proper shape early on. We can, you know, incorporate it in dumplings and shrimp cake and rice and noodles and a lot of other different types of food products. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Fabulous. So much flexibility there. So your early tests have proved successful, and you estimate that you can make a kilo of shrimp meat for somewhere around $5,000, which is much less than many of the lab-grown meat companies out there producing things like replacement beef. Without revealing anything too proprietary, are you able to share with us anything about how you have been able to keep the cost so much lower?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is not proprietary. We have spoken about this before, so the good thing about seafood or shrimp cells is that we don't need to use fetal bovine serum, which is kind of the most expensive ingredient that is added to cells for them to grow. As you can imagine, they are seafood, so they don't really need fetal bovine serum to grow. We do use an alternative concentrated nutrient source, which is pretty expensive, and hence the $5,000. So we are trying to reduce it to $50 a kilogram by end of next year. And this will come from us kind of finding an alternative to this nutrient source, mostly looking at food-grade, sustainable ingredients that can grow our cells. Also, there are a couple of technical advantages that shrimp cells have. For example, if you take cells from a cow or a pig or chicken, the cells tend to stick to the bottom of the plastic surface or the glass surface that you're growing them on. Hence, they're called adherent cells in scientific terms. But for them to scale up into these huge bioreactors and fermenters, which every clean meat company has to do, is that these cells have to be made into suspension, pretty much floating in the liquid, 3D, so that they can get the nutrients and grow in numbers. It's hard for these cells to, for the red and white meat cells to kind of adapt and become 3D. Whereas with our cells, they're already in suspension. So we, even if we push them to stick, they don't stick, which is good. So we have been able to quickly move into a bioreactor, I would say, a liquid 3D model rather than kind of sticking to the adherent cells. So this is like one or two of the technical advantages that we have. There are a few more, but these are kind of the two most expensive parts of cell culture or clean meat.
Whoa, that's fascinating. Okay, so Sharanya, I just really wanted to pull back and talk about shrimp production and consumption for this episode. You know, in a nutshell, both are on the rise. And I looked into it. I think shrimp is appealing to a lot of people, and because it's really high in protein and low in fat, especially, I believe, B12. But I think underlying this all is inherently just that human population growth is happening. We talk about it all the time. We're going to be at the 9.6 billion in our lifetimes, and just more of everything is being consumed. So another interesting fact that I came across as I was looking into this is that while global shrimp production is definitely on the rise, over here in the United States, it turns out that shrimp is actually the most popular seafood eaten in the country.
Wow. Yeah. And if you think about it, I think in the US, most of the consumption is the entire shrimp. But in a lot of Asian countries, I know like in parts of India as well as in Southeast Asia, shrimp is not consumed whole, but it's rather in a paste form that's added to a lot of curries and sauces and things like that as a flavor adder.
Right.
Does that make sense?
So, yeah, and I recall from traveling through those areas, definitely it is a major part of the culinary culture. So good to keep in mind, right, that it's not just what we would perhaps picture in the West, which is like it just being popped on top of a dish at a restaurant or whatnot. So thank you for bringing that up. Now, consuming shrimp is very destructive and notably unsustainable, is what I've been researching. The issue and implications are just so wide-ranging and multifaceted that we really don't want to get into it all in this episode. But I did want to pull some bullet points that I think our listeners, if they don't already know, might find some value in reminding themselves of or learning about. So number one is bycatch. Now, bycatch in the fishing industry is when a fish or another marine species is accidentally caught while trying to catch a target species, and that's often for consumption. Now, when it comes to actual shrimp fishing, let's call it, the process is called shrimp trawling, and it's when a boat or two or more drags a fishing net through the water, and that net is used for trawling, what is called a trawl, which kind of like is, picture it like a rake, like dragging along the bottom of the ocean. So that like really destroys a lot of beautiful ocean ecology, like coral and so on, but it also creates a lot of bycatch.
Yes, and particularly with the shrimp trawling industry, one of the animals that has been seriously endangered by it is the leatherback turtle. And sea turtles tend to be the ones that are commonly caught in these shrimp trawling nets. A lot of government agencies around the world have come together to try to mitigate the impacts of the shrimp trawling industry by including essentially a trap door on these nets to allow turtles to escape. And those are called turtle excluder devices. But what happens with those trap doors is that it also allows some of the shrimp to escape with it, with the turtle. And so fishermen then have found ways to get around these rules and regulations about putting those things in place. So they might have it when they leave shore, but they might tie it closed or something like that. And given that turtles are air-breathing animals, they need to come to the surface to breathe. But if they're caught in these trawl nets, then they're stuck underwater for long periods of time, and therefore they drown.
How utterly awful.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. So this is not inconsequential. I mean, you might just be picturing these little boats tugging these nets along the water, but shrimp trawl fisheries catch 2% of the world's total catch of all fish by weight, yet produce more than one-third of the world's total bycatch.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And American shrimp trawlers produce bycatch ratios of between 3-1 or 15-1. So at the larger end of the scale, we're talking 15 unintentionally caught marine species so that we can get one shrimp.
Wow. And if you think about the size of a shrimp compared to the size of a fish or some other species that's actually not intended for that specific trip or fishing trip, it's just,
it's
my
a
God.
Waste, it's a waste of life.
Yeah.
So it's a shameful waste of life.
Wow.
Next bullet point is farming. Shrimp farming is an aquaculture business that exists in either a marine or freshwater environment producing shrimp or prawns for human consumption. Farm shrimp accounts for 55% of the shrimp produced globally. Most of these farms occur in China, followed by Thailand, Indonesia, India, Vietnam, Brazil, Ecuador, and Bangladesh, and it has generated a substantial income in these developing countries.
Yeah, I remember that being a big thing when I was growing up in India. I lived in Chennai, which is a coastal town, and all along the shore, you could see these aquaculture ponds being created and then obviously being populated with various species that they were trying to grow.
Right. And so let's talk about the consequences of this type of growing method. In these tropical climates where most shrimp are farmed, it takes about 3 to 6 months to raise market-sized shrimp, and farmers generally do about 2 or 3 crops per year. The organic waste, chemicals, and antibiotics from these shrimp farms pollute the local groundwater or nearby coastal estuaries. And of course, these are often ecologically sensitive habitats. And a lot of times these natural habitats get cleared to create ponds for shrimp production. Apparently, 80% of farm shrimp are raised from just 2 species. And so these monocultures are not as strong as a diverse, you know, genetic, whatever you want to call it. You're the scientist, not me.
Genetic pool.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the genetic pool is diluted. And so these monocultures are super susceptible to diseases, which can lead to major outbreaks with devastating consequences. So when the shrimp get sick, they actually tend to bob up and swim on the surface of the water versus the bottom. I didn't look into the reasons why. I don't think we need to get into that here. And so what will happen is seagulls swoop down, they eat the diseased shrimp, and then they defecate on a pond or ponds a few miles away, spreading the pathogen.
Yeah, so it can quickly spread through. If it starts in one pond, it could quickly spread through the entire setup or even multiple setups further down the coastline.
Exactly. So just to sum this up, one of the other key impacts that I wanted to flag for listeners is that there actually is like a consequential human impact to all of this as well that many people don't know about. So last year, there was a new Human Rights Watch report released that showed that forced labor, human trafficking, and other rights abuses are widespread in the Thai fishing industry. Reports have exposed prison-like conditions, and the new report details how workers are often paid below the minimum wage, often not paid in time, and are held in debt. And so that's quite upsetting. And I thought if you or whomever's interested in learning more about this shocking issue, you can check out the 134-page report from Human Rights Watch. It's called Hidden Chains, Forced Labor and Rights Abuses in the Thailand's Fishing Industry. And that's by Human Rights Watch. It's compiled from interviews with 248 current and former fishers. It includes several quotes from workers as well.
Wow.
And, you know, there is also another human factor that when shrimp farms are shut down due to the aforementioned widespread disease, there are socioeconomic impacts, including mass loss of employment.
Wow.
So here we go. Bottom line, people aren't going to stop eating shrimp all around the world, but finding a way to replicate it in a way, as Sandhya, Kai, and the team at Shiok Meats are doing, is a seriously viable way to curb the issues by stopping taking them out of the ocean or growing them in it or even in fresh water where it does have an impact on the whole circle.
Yeah. No, it's amazing that they've come up with an alternative for what might seem like a very niche market, but the more you look at it, it's more prevalent in the number of different issues that it intersects with.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know you're tightly focused on shrimp, but you've also mentioned crab and lobster. Is it for the same reasons that you will target those next?
Yeah, so shrimp, crab, and lobster belong to the same family of crustaceans. So biologically, they're very close to each other. So that means whatever we have nailed down in terms of technology and technicalities for shrimp will actually work almost 80 to 90% for crab and lobster. There will be some tweaks and changes that we have to make because crab is more complex and bigger than shrimp and lobster is complex than crab. But difference between shrimp versus beef is like super, super different. So we would rather not go to a different, completely different set of animals. We would rather stick to this family of animals that are closer to each other.
It's simply more efficient for you to do so.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, and there's less people, if anyone, working on that on crab and lobster, cultured crab and lobster, right? So it sounds like it's very important is to hit areas that others are not necessarily.
Yeah, definitely wanted to differentiate ourselves. I think we didn't want to step on other clean meat companies' toes by doing the same meats that they were doing. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we look up to companies like Finless Foods and Memphis Meats and so on. And I mean, we reach out to Uma and Mike Sheldon quite often, and we'd love to like learn from them. We're inspired by them. So we would rather collaborate rather than compete with companies that are already a couple of years older than us and that have done a great job at it.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you. That's perfect. For our listeners wanting to know more about Shiok Meats and the work you're doing, is there anywhere you would suggest that they go to keep up to date or learn more?
Yeah, please follow us on LinkedIn. It's just Shiok Meats. That's it.
Okay.
And basically, we put all our latest interviews, press articles, anything that's exciting that we have done, which is non-proprietary, all of that is on our page. So they can know what we're up to and what we're doing, where we are, and so on. Also, our website is not updated that often, but they can have a look at www.shiokmeats.com. But I think the best is to follow us on LinkedIn.
Okay, and then this is the final one. You have said that you will try to avoid using GMO stem cells to avoid the GMO tag. So this comes up a lot, actually, when I talk to people about culture. What happened with GMO, and you know, why is it important for you and this industry to avoid the same outcome?
So honestly, I don't know what happened with GMO. If anybody has ever eaten eggplants or corn in their life, they have definitely eaten GMO. And that is definitely 90% of the world's population. So I don't know what's the big deal about this GMO tag and why people are scared of it. Mm-hmm. There is no scientific evidence or proof that it affects us, that it's, you know, its disadvantages or whatever it is. So it's just something that was blown up. I mean, I don't want to get too much into the history of it, but
right.
Something that was blown up for unfortunate reasons. Why we are trying to stay away from GMO has a different reason, actually, along with this reason, of course. I mean, where public perception is that, oh, I don't want GMO, that means it's better that you don't work with a GM product because you want your consumers to buy your product, first thing. The second reason for us, actually, is that the more and more you start working on GM, the costs do go up high. You have to spend more money and more effort. And honestly, even though you talk about, oh, I make genetic manipulations in the start of the process, but by the end, the food product doesn't have any GM and so on. That means you're adding an extra step to remove the GM from your product, which is again, an extra step of money being added onto it, an extra step of cost. So we want to stay away from any process that brings up our costs.
Mm-hmm.
So because we are trying to reduce our costs. So what's the point of adding in steps that would rather, you know, that would actually increase your costs? So we want to stay away from GM due to that reason, and also due to the reason that public, you know, has a difference of opinion with us. And they are our ultimate consumers. So they have to be super comfortable buying our product.
So tell me what I was going to actually ask you. Why did you want to partner specifically with Kai Yi? Like, what sort of qualities do you look for in a teammate or a partner or even potentially future employees?
Yeah, sure. I can speak about that. So actually, this is my third time being an entrepreneur of sorts. So my first two companies were tech startups. I was a part-time co-founder. I think I made a big mistake with the first one. So I ended the partnership, but I learned a lot through that. I think the first thing I learned out of that was that never start a company with your best friend. So I think that was my first point to note when I was looking for a co-founder. I was like, don't choose a friend.
Okay.
Choose a relative, don't choose your husband or your, you know, cousin or sister or whatever. So kind of keep it one arm distance away. And then I think with my second startup, we started off as a different company and then we pivoted quite quickly and we're successful now. But the idea that the lesson that I learned from that startup was you should have co-founders who are willing to communicate, listen, and pivot if it makes sense and not really stick to their roots so much that the business will suffer. So these are kind of two things. And the third thing specifically for me was, which I've seen in Asia a lot, is a lot of Asians are very risk averse. They're very pre-planned, especially scientists. We are more hypothesis driven rather than exploratory nowadays. That's how academia works. But to form a crazy company, which is the first clean meat company in Singapore, I needed to find another crazy partner. crazy in the good sense, of course.
Yes, totally.
Crazy who can take that crazy step, crazy in terms of doing random experiments, figuring it out, be open to exploratory science, which is very rare, like I mentioned. And these are some of the questions that I asked when I was interviewing a couple of potential co-founders. So I just went and said, just imagine tomorrow we are trying to isolate stem cells from some random animal, like let's think of a mammoth or something like that. And would you be interested in doing it, or you just think it's so crazy that you don't want to be part of it?
Oh my goodness. I mean, having worked and lived in Tokyo for 5 years, I totally know about risk-averse Asian culture. Don't even tell me. So that really resonates. Did you end up asking her the actual mammoth question?
Yeah, I think I didn't ask about mammoth, but I told her, like, just imagine we are doing some crazy animal tomorrow and we're trying to isolate a particular type of stem cells, but we end up isolating something else, which is more exciting. What do you think about it? And stuff like that. So I kind of posed those questions to her.
Yeah. And she was like, she was like completely game for them, it sounds like.
And you won't believe it, what she said. Like, it was like the stars were aligned. She was like, it's science. It's supposed to be the unknown. And I was like,
wow.
That's it. I've made up my mind. Now it's time for you to make up your minds. And then August 5th last year, so it was like a couple of days back, we just celebrated like a year of her saying yes to me. Literally. So yeah, August 5th, she came back and said, I want to take this crazy ride with you. Let's do it.
It was your business engagement anniversary.
Yes.
Oh my God, I love that. I love the science is supposed to be the unknown. That's brilliant. I mean, that's, we sometimes forget that in such a corporate capitalist kind of marketplace and world we're in, don't we? So I think that's beautiful and inspiring. You being only founded last year, under a year ago, and yet you have already made so much huge progress, from showcasing your prototype, Shumai, at the Disruption in Food and Sustainability Summit in March, I believe it was, to, of course, raising your $4.6 million in your latest seed funding round. How on earth have you been able to move so quickly and get to this point in this short period of time?
Can I just say we both haven't slept for 12 months? No, I think that's one key part of it. But I think both of us, when we started off, so there's a little bit of a backstory to this. So when we started this off, people actually thought we were crazy. Like, they were like, why are you leaving your well-paid jobs? You're not a spin-off from a university or an institute. You started a company with an idea, no IP. You haven't even gone into a lab and figured out if you can get out stem cells from shrimp. There are no research papers talking about meat or muscle cells from shrimp. What are you thinking about? Like, are you both ladies, not guys? So two ladies gone crazy. What's wrong with you? This is so not Asian. You don't have money. Nobody's going to fund you. You're never going to succeed. This was all that we heard in the first 4 weeks of us talking about starting this company. You know, we hadn't even like started the company. So this was what it was. And basically, Ryan was the person who believed completely in us and said, I'll write the first $10,000 check and let's take it from there. And I said, $10,000 converts to about $13,000-$14,000 Sing dollars, which will, you know what, we can survive for about 2 months with that if we don't take salaries and just concentrate on research. And that's exactly what we did. And we were ready to not take paychecks or salaries for the next 12 months. So that's exactly what we had decided. But we were lucky enough to raise money. So we are taking a minimal salary right now. But pretty much both of us decided that we'll grind it out so hard that at the end of 12 months, if we still don't make it, we can always say that we tried and it didn't work. It shouldn't be that we didn't get a chance to try and then we just gave up. So that was pretty much from our minds day in and day out. And what we did was we just pushed as hard as we can, especially being an independent company in Asia, which is very unlikely. Most of the deep tech companies are spin-offs. So when we started off, like I mentioned, we didn't have IP. We had no clue. What we did was we rented a lab, and what we said was we'll take a couple of shrimps, we'll cut them open, and we'll find out if we can isolate stem cells. So that's exactly how we started off. And then I think also it's a bit of luck, or I don't know, the stars are aligned. We were at the right time in the right place. Money was flowing in into clean meat and alternative proteins. A lot of the Silicon Valley was looking at Asia as a big market, and we were here in Asia. We both are super confident with our skills and knowledge. We've been dealing with stem cells for over 20 plus years combined. And we were like, we can isolate stem cells from any animal. Let's just do it. And our thought process was, if it doesn't work with shrimp, let's look at another seafood. You know, that was kind of where we were. And then we got into Y Combinator in December. And truly, Y Combinator is an accelerator. So it kind of pushed us to think beyond just research, but, you know, pushed for us to think of consumer education, consumer acceptance, perception, prototyping. So I would just say that we work really hard. We worked and are working really hard. Now we have a great team of people, but until the prototype, it was just Kai and me. She pretty much grinded it out in the lab. I grinded it out on the hustling and the fundraising side. And we just made it happen.
Right. That's incredible. Congratulations. It sounds like just pure hustle and grit. And also, like you said, perhaps a little bit of luck, although I almost just think it was your hustle and grit. So yeah, congratulations. That's amazing. And then, you know, in terms of this sort of early stage funding success that you've had, do you have any tips for other fledgling mission-driven entrepreneurs in this space on how to secure this kind of funding and how also to find the right investors? Like, were you selective about that? Did you seek out VCs who were mission aligned, or what was your approach and why do you think you were successful?
So for us, it is a combination of my previous contacts to Ryan's connections. To us, kind of, I would say at that point, we were not even sending one outbound email to investors. So it was all inbound. It was all through, you know, us putting on social media, how we are grinding it out, what progress we've made, being part of YC, the huge press coverage that we ended up getting because we are, you know, two female founders, the first clean meat company in Asia, in Singapore, sorry, first clean meat company of YC that's been funded. So it kind of blew the entire press media kind of ecosystem. And then we just had a lot of inbound investor emails. So what we ended up doing definitely was choosing investors. We were totally oversubscribed. Honestly, we were looking to raise only about $3.5 million, but we ended up raising a little more than 4.5. But this was because of sheer interest, strategic investors, and the sheer passion that we have. And one strong advice I have to entrepreneurs that are looking to fundraise is that you are going to pitch almost 10 times a day for a year to close a round. But even on the 3,650th time, you should have the same passion. You know, it has to be there. You cannot say, I'm tired of pitching. It's your business. You have to have that passion even 10 years down the line for it to be successful. So just wake up in the morning, make up your mind, and tell that you're going to do this pitch 10 times today to different people. And you're going to have the same passion and the same, you know, happiness and the same enthusiasm that you had on day one.
Wow, that is really, really valuable advice, I think. And I'm sure you would agree that we do need more entrepreneurs and scientists rising to hit all areas of this market because there's so much potential and the planet needs it as well as the animals. So in terms of, again, jumping into another question that is related to what we're talking about. After Animals, the podcast is proud to be female founded, produced, and hosted. And so we also think it's our responsibility to actively seek out a diverse range of amazing innovators and creators such as yourself. That said, we have noticed that there is less female representation in leadership, especially in the food tech space, but also just science in general. So for you, what does it mean to be a female founder and leader in the space? And also coming from a scientific background, do you feel that you can or should set an example for more females and other minorities to excel and lead in the space?
Sure. So actually, this is an interesting question. And both Kai and I have thought of this a lot because when we actually got through YC and we went to YC and we spent a couple of months there during the program, we realized that we were actually being celebrated as two women entrepreneurs or two women scientists. It's great when I listen to other female scientists or entrepreneurs come to me or Kai and say that we look we look up to you. We are very inspired by you. You kind of push it. You have a family, you have a kid, you have a husband, but you end up doing whatever you got to do and you're great at it and we look up to you. So, and then I go back and ask them this question. I'm like, okay, but I'm pretty young. Don't you have other role models or people to look up to? And they're like, not really. There aren't many people that we can look up to. There aren't many people that ladies or females that we can access easily. Like, we need to access. Like, if I drop you a message on LinkedIn, you are replying to me within a month. Let's say, I mean, you don't reply immediately, but you are replying to me in a couple of weeks or within a month, which is what we need. So honestly, I just feel that women or females out there basically need someone to show them something, but then they grind it out and do it the right way. And we are happy that we are able to do that. But we have a lot to learn as well. And we look up to a lot of other women who have been successful. And it's kind of like this extremely happy chain that has to be going on.
Right, absolutely. And that ties back to what we're trying to do, is to seek out more female founded companies and leaders such as yourself, so that we can illuminate your stories and create sort of more networks, right? So you had mentioned that when you're doing all these pitches, the most important thing is to keep that passion up. And so do you find that you are able to do that because this is your own business and because it is mission driven, as opposed to perhaps your previous work, which was just as amazing, but this is obviously a little bit different? Like, is that where the passion comes from? Is that where you draw from?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. I think it's my second baby, right? Like, it's this baby that I have to groom and make it big and successful so that we help the world, we help animals, humans, and the environment. And it's that passion. I don't know how to explain it, but it's that passion from within to make it happen. That drive from within that I think is just getting better and more. It's increasing day by day rather than going down. And if I don't do it, or if we as co-founders don't do it, who else is going to do it, right? So it's our company. You can't expect your employees to have the same passion as you as co-founders. So you are the one who's the first and on top and doing it, and you just have to do it. So the passion is such that even if I'm tired, the minute I have to start talking about Shiok Meats, my energy level just goes up. I'm like, yeah, let's just do this and start explaining about our technology and how we started this off and how we are good at it and what progress we've made and what we're looking for and so on. So it's, you know, looking forward to a bright future, looking back at the mistakes we have made or the happy times that we have had, and putting it all together and just making it believable. It's not that I'm putting out a pitch that's so well practiced that I'm just doing it, but it's actually with that drive and passion that I have within me that I do it each and every time.
Right, right. That's wonderful. And so I'm sure that there are many, many scientists and people in other fields who are experts at what they do, or, you know, very good at what they do, who still feel that little itch, you know, am I doing enough in this lifetime to make a positive impact in the world? So you had mentioned earlier that your husband had kept encouraging you to take that entrepreneur role versus working for somebody else. What were some of the things that were holding you back? And what was the final, you know, kind of, I guess, catalyst that made you take that leap, which it sounds like you do not regret at all?
Yeah, so actually, I haven't spoken much about this, but I think I can on your podcast. But I've had a pretty rough, I wouldn't say childhood, but something about my teens. So I lost my father when I was pretty young. He passed away because of kidney failure and diabetes when I was just 15. So no problem. But after that, life was pretty rough in the sense that we were pretty, I wouldn't say wealthy, but we were like upper middle class of sorts until I was 10, 12 years old. And what happened after that was pretty much I lost my dad and things changed. And my mom was always a homemaker. She's never worked in her life. And it was just me and my mom. And we just had to figure it out. So I have grinded it out throughout my life, personally, financially, and professionally. So I think that's where the passion and the grit comes from as well. But, you know, having done all of that, I've seen the poor, I've seen the rich, I've seen not having money, I've seen not having a roof over my head, I've seen not be, me being able to pay my school fees. Like, you know, I've been in that situation, but I've always had people around me support and help me and believe in me. And that's what's required. You know, it's that human touch, that human emotion that's required at any point.
Oh my goodness. I have learned so much. That's incredible. Thank you for sharing that. Sandhya, thank you so much for carving out the time. Congratulations. In under a year, look at what you've achieved and look what's coming ahead. I'm so inspired by the work that you're doing. And I'm sure that many of our, all of the listeners of this episode will be as well.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to listening to the podcast.
So Sharanya, talking about all of this exciting moment in the cultured protein space, there's actually a focused event coming up in San Francisco pretty soon, the Cultured Meat Symposium.
Yeah, and we will be there in person. So if anyone listening is also going to be there, come find us.
Yes, come find us and please say hi or tell us about the next greatest interviewee that we can be connected with for the podcast. Yeah, so we're really looking forward to it. The Cultured Meat Symposium, or CMS19, is the largest conference dedicated to cell-cultured meat technology. This year, CMS19 is taking place in San Francisco on November 14th and 15th. And you can go and learn more and register for the conference at www.cms19.com. And if you use the coupon code After Animals, you will get a 20% discount on your ticket.
That's amazing. Go get your 20% discount and come see us in person.
Yes, please. Then the coupon code once again is After Animals, straight through, capital letters. That's the coupon code. Okay, see you guys next episode.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of After Animals. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Or tell one friend about our show. The more people we have listening, the faster we can spread the word. Thank you.
The After Animals podcast's mission is to activate a kinder, more compassionate world through innovation.
After Animals is hosted by me, Yulara Nakagawa.
And me, Sharanya Krishnaprasad.
For the animals.